Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a little bit different show, one that I think is important because we live in a society where there are a lot of fads going on. And in this day and age, you really have to have your health. The COVID situation, our ability to take care of ourselves, I don't think we can depend necessarily on the health profession like we used to be, depend on it. And now it's becoming very important to understand how we take care of ourselves. And nutrition is the basis of health, in my opinion. Even though I trained in the standard way of medicine, where everything seems to be written as a prescription, and that's how we consider the ways to get to health and stay healthy, I don't really believe that anymore. I think it's about what we put into our bodies, how we think. And we want to talk today about nutrition. And today I'm very excited to have Ms. Sally Fallon Morell on. She's the founding president of the Weston A. Price Foundation, a nonprofit nutrition education foundation dedicated to returning the nutrient-dense food to American tables. She's also the founder of a campaign for Real Milk, which has as its goal universal access to clean raw milk from pasture-fed animals. She's the author of the best-selling cookbook, Nourishing Traditions, the Nourishing Traditions book of baby and child care, Nourishing Broth, Nourishing Fats, and Nourishing Diets. Her latest book is The Contagion Myth, and she and her husband have a wealth of knowledge, and they're the owners of P.A. Bowen Farmstead in Southern Maryland. It produces raw cheese and raw milk from pasteurized cows and whey-fed pork and grass-fed poultry and eggs. So this is somebody who not only talks about it, but lives in a way that is all about health. So Ms. Morell, I want to thank you so much for joining today. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's get started. I mean, how did you go, start your process of thinking outside the box? Because everything that we're ever taught is just commercial, bigger the better. if it can be manufactured in a way that's not natural, then it's better for you. So how do we get into this trap of if it's artificial, it must be good? And how did you break out of that?
Well, I think it was a long process. I definitely feel I was guided to be where I am today. But I was very fortunate to grow up in a family where my mother was a good cook and we ate real food. We always had butter and she made chicken broth and she was a very good cook. I would say that my parents were among the very first foodies before foodies was even a word or was considered something popular. But I did have health problems growing up, especially allergies, which nobody else in the family suffered from. But I really had a lot of problems with allergies, fatigue, problems with moods, fluctuating moods. And so I was looking for solutions to this. And the first thing that I learned was that if I ate lots of fats, if I ate butter with every meal, if I ate, meat and with the fat, that I my allergies were better. I didn't have low blood sugar. I was just much more stable. So when the low-fat propaganda began, which was really in the 50s, I can remember being shown movies in grade school about how bad saturated fats were. So it was starting then. I just didn't believe it. I because I knew that what I needed to do to feel good. My first child was born in 1973, and that was the same year I discovered Dr. Weston Price. I read his book, and that kind of confirmed, what my sort of intuitive beliefs were, that we shouldn't be using vegetable oils or margarine or anything like that. And I just continued with Dr. Price's principles for three more children, and all of them very healthy, and none of them needing braces, which was kind of interesting because myself and my siblings all needed braces. Then I got the idea to write Nourishing Traditions. I didn't really know what I was doing, but I just kept at it. And the book came out in 1996. And I would not call it a runaway bestseller. It was a plodding bestseller. And it's just sold and sold over the years. I've sold over 700,000 copies now.
Wow.
And the book changed a lot of thinking for a lot of people. And then my co-author and I, Mary Enig, and I founded the Weston A. Price Foundation in 1999. And again, that started small and obscure, but now I do think we're recognized with a lot of respect for providing accurate information about nutrition.
Well,
so there it is in a nutshell.
Well, I think that's an excellent encapsulation, and it was organic the way you came to it. And it's usually I find that people who enter this space, this mindset, either have an illness, have some sort of process they're trying to
yes.
get to the yes. root cause. And I'm just done with the healthcare profession. I don't think it should be called healthcare, frankly, anymore. It's about management. It's about taking
care,
a pill.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Sick care is a perfect example of what it is.
And I actually never liked doctors. I had a very bad experience as a child when I was given a smallpox vaccine. Mm. And I hated even to go into a doctor's office. So to avoid all that, I just tried to figure out for myself what I needed to do.
Well, I think a lot of people need to go that route, quite frankly. And it's not so much that it's sick care, but it's a very aggressive approach towards anybody who wants to go in their own direction. That's where I really have an issue. And you talked about the marketing. I remember when eggs were the worst thing in the world. Butter was the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
And you had to do margarine, and it was just, you know, it wasn't just that it was better in their opinion, but what you were doing was going to hurt you. And it's this fear factor. Do you find that raw milk is the same way? You can barely get it. And it's almost feels like you're running some sort of,
black market.
Exactly.
Actually, that whole scenario has changed in the last 20 years. We set up a website, realmilk.com, which tells people where they can get raw milk, and it has become much more available. There's probably 20 million raw milk drinkers in the United States, and the number of sources of raw milk is growing. We just revised that website so it has an interactive map on it. Which state are you in?
In Georgia.
Georgia, yes, you can get raw milk labeled as pet milk in Georgia, and you can go right there and find out where it is.
Well, that's awesome. Well, for the listeners who don't know the difference between pasteurized and raw milk, can you tell us, they put the fear of God in, if it's not pasteurized and it must be toxic. What's the story? I know we have a couple minutes for the break, but I want to start off with that because that's a real misnomer.
It's incredible to even say that because mankind has been very well nourished on raw milk for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
And it does actually have a very superlative safety record because raw milk contains a lot of factors that kill pathogens and strengthen the immune system. And they're all killed when you pasteurize. And in addition, every single vitamin and mineral in raw milk has an enzyme that ensures 100% assimilation. No other food is like this. In no other food do you absorb all the vitamins and minerals, except raw milk. And these enzymes are destroyed by pasteurization. And when we say pasteurization, what we're really talking about today is ultra-pasteurization. Most milk is ultra-pasteurized, which means that it's heated above the boiling point to 230 degrees, which absolutely destroys any goodness in that milk. And this is why more and more people are allergic to milk. Because they cannot digest the warped and distorted proteins from the ultra-pasteurization process. The market for pasteurized milk is going down relentlessly from 1% to 3% per year, whereas the market for raw milk is growing every year. And that's because people don't realize they don't have to be afraid of it, and they can digest it. It tastes delicious. Their children grow healthy and strong on raw milk. So this has actually been one of our success stories.
Well, I think on that note, let's take our first break because that's kind of the theme of the show, that people need to educate themselves and stop falling into the trap of being marketed. to the nines. Yes. And that marketing never serves the interest of the consumer, in my opinion. On that note, let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Sally Fallon Morell, and she's the founding president of the Weston A. Price Foundation. You can read her blog at nourishingtraditions.com. And before the break, we were talking about raw milk. I mean, that segues into things like butter, right? And to cream and heavy cream. And all these fad diets that we seem to be enamored with. I'm wondering, if people were to eat natural, whole, untainted food, would we be as obese and in such bad shape as we are right now?
Well, one of the closely held secrets of the food processing industry is the fact that they put things in the food that make you gain weight. And the main ingredient is MSG. And this is shown in scientific studies. They did a study in China, and in the households where they used more MSG, they were heavier. So they put MSG in all processed food. Now, MSG is addictive, for one thing, and you actually eat more. But even if you're not eating more, the MSG makes you gain weight. And it is in all processed foods. So there's one thing that you're not getting when you cook your food and use natural ingredients.
Wow. I didn't realize that. I mean, you look at the labels. Are they calling it something else besides MSG?
They are.
Okay,
yes,
good.
For example, the food industry can put something in called spices or even natural flavorings. These are mixes that they get. And if it's less than 50% MSG, they don't have to put MSG on the label. So there's a lot of fraud in the labeling. You just sort of have to know what to look for. Also, anytime you see something hydrolyzed or autolyzed, or extracted, that's going to have MSG in it.
Wow, they get around with this fancy language. No one's reading these things anyway. But I think people got wise to MSG and they started to stay away from it. But they're still sneaking
it. But they thought they were.
Yeah, they did.
Very interesting case where the Red Lobster restaurant, this was years ago, but they advertised no MSG because they didn't think they had MSG in their food. And someone in the restaurant who was very sensitive passed out eating the food, and Red Lobster was sued. Mm. So you never see any restaurants or food companies or anything bragging about no MSG anymore because they don't even realize it's there. And sometimes it's formed during processing.
And just, I know that isn't a neurotoxin to a degree?
It's a neurotoxic, yes.
Okay.
It actually kills nerve cells. See, glutamic acid is an essential amino acid. And when we eat that in food, naturally in food, it's bound to peptides and other compounds. So it's slowly released in the body as we need it. But MSG is sort of like naked glutamic acid. And it kind of overloads the nervous cells, mm-hmm. the nerve cells, mm-hmm. and it can cause a lot of damage.
It's sadly sad that when you're thinking about something that should be nutritious, that it's actually causing disease. And this is a esoteric question, but where's the ethics in this?
And there's no ethics in the food industry.
No. And, you know, even the governing bodies.
To make money, you have to cut corners and use the least expensive ingredients. And you kind of fluff these foods up. They would taste terrible without all the flavorings and the MSG in them. Mm-hmm. They taste like cardboard. So they have to add these things. And they also use the cheapest oils, the industrial seed oils, which are slow poisons, especially over the generations. So, the number one thing is to go back and eat real food that doesn't have all these ingredients in them.
Well, I know that your farmstead is in Maryland, but are you able to, have customers outside of the state? How do people reach you? Because it sounds like
I believe in having thousands and thousands of local farms.
Yeah.
So everyone has access to local food. We can go over state lines with everything except for our chicken, I think, which is kind of odd because we butcher the chicken on the farm, so it can only be sold in Maryland. Mm. But I encourage people to come a long way. I encourage local people to come to the farm, and I encourage people in other places to find their own farms. And they can do this through the Real Milk website. They can find a lot of good local farms.
I think it's one of the things that people, I don't think they know how easy it is. And you're right. I'm kind of stuck in the past where raw milk was like, you were doing this incognito, but it's really wonderful to know that there is sites like yours you can go to. Yeah. You don't have to work so hard, but you do have to have the kernel of wanting to eat better and wanting right. to take care of yourself. Are you finding that people are becoming
just,
more?
Just to add to that, the other thing is that the Weston A. Price Foundation has over 400 local chapters, most of them in the United States. And so you can go on our website and find your nearest local chapter. And that chapter keeps a food resource list telling you where you can get pastured eggs, where the food deliveries are, where you can get sauerkraut, you know, all these things that we're recommending.
That's awesome. And I think when you think about where we are right now with various supply chain snarls and having food insecurity to a degree, is this a way to think about working outside of that system?
Yes, we're definitely working outside of the system. We're trying to build a new food system. And we're not trying to get the government to do this because they never will. We're just trying, I call it the bubble up economy. We're trying to have this come from the bottom. And the only way to do that is for consumers to realize the value of this food and to support the farmers. We have something called the 50% campaign, where you take the pledge to spend at least 50% of your income, your food dollar, on locally produced food.
Wow, that's awesome. I mean, that would just raise the standard of the quality of what people are putting in their bodies. And imagine how that can ripple through the whole system where people aren't having these diseases of nutrition or nutritionally based diseases, but diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol. Yeah. I mean, these things didn't really exist the way they do now until they started to
mess with the food industry.
Certainly
not diabetes and heart disease, but the cholesterol thing is completely phony. And we actually encourage people to have high cholesterol. People with high cholesterol live longer and they're nicer and they're healthier.
Well, you know, from a science base, you're absolutely right, because the hormones, sex hormones and various hormones that we make are based in fats. If you don't have the cholesterol, you cannot make them. So
that's right.
You wonder why people are having problems with fertility or sexual function. It's anxiety.
Or mood.
Exactly.
Or being with stress. All these hormones are made out of cholesterol.
It just seems like a bigger picture is going on here. You put people on diets that don't help them, and then there's a magic drug for it, isn't there?
Yes, right. And then you feed into the medical system. So your goal is to not need a doctor.
And as a physician, I heartily agree with that.
I do.
I mean, I want to help people who need help, not manage something that, by definition, shouldn't be a disease if you were doing things the right way.
And that's right.
You know, God made an amazing system, and it all works when you give it the right building blocks.
And that's right. Exactly.
And for those, again, for listeners who don't understand the difference between, let's say, grass-fed and corn-fed, because there's a big difference, isn't there?
Well, we're interested in grass-fed animal products. So this is eggs, poultry, milk, meat, woodlands pork, you know, pork raised naturally, for two reasons. One is when it's raised outside and on pasture, you maximize what we call the fat-soluble vitamins A, D, and K. The cow that's eating green grass will make a lot of vitamin A and a lot of vitamin K, and the cows in the sunlight will make a lot of vitamin D. So that's one reason. But the other is just that the conventional farming, confinement farming, has to use a lot of chemicals. Just to give you one example, 70% of all chicken feed in this country contains arsenic. And so that's given to the chickens every day. And if you're eating a lot of conventional chicken, you could develop arsenic poisoning.
What on earth could the arsenic be used for? Is it some sort of antibiotic to that?
Yes, it has an antibiotic quality, and it makes the chickens grow really fast. Mm. And before all the diseases show up. So the idea is to grow these birds really fast and butcher them before they get tumors and, you know, necrosis and things like that.
My goodness. You know, is there, I know we're going to take a break in a couple of minutes, but I want to get your take on, you know, animal husbandry. And is there some connection between how the animals are raised and you know, I would say butchered versus commercial versus a natural mm-hmm. approach? That does ripple from an energetic standpoint, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the Bible admonishes us to be kind to our animals. There are regulations, so to speak, in the Bible about being kind to your animals. Mm-hmm. And farm animals, they are much better treated by and large than animals in the confinement system. Well, the whole confinement system is just filthy, for one thing. And these animals, they want to be outside. They're designed to be outside.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and then as far as the butchering process, actually the butchering process has improved even in the conventional system. But, you know, it's interesting. I'll tell you a little story about a farmer I knew, and he always, when the cows were going to the butcher, he put them in a special pen for a couple of days, and he went and thanked them and, you know, told them how grateful he was. And then the truck came to take the animals to the butcher. And one day he had some animals there, and the truck didn't come. And it didn't come for about a week, and the cows went crazy. They were ready to go.
Mm.
And the truck didn't come, and they were upset about it.
Wow.
And also I knew a gal who was in a buffalo club, and when it was time to butcher a buffalo, they went out to the field, and always, I get chills when I say this, but always one buffalo came out and stood there ready to go. They had, you know, thought about it and prayed about it the night before, and one buffalo came out, and he was the one that they just shot him and took him to the butcher. So, you know, domestic animals are happiest when they're serving man, and that's what they do on a pasture-raised farm.
I think that's a great place to take our second break and think about that. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living a Solution. Again, we're speaking with Ms. Sally Fallon Morrell. You can read her blogs at nourishingtraditions.com. You can get your books on Amazon. Or where can people buy your books?
They're all on Amazon. They're all on my own website, newtrendspublishing.com. By the way, the stories I just told you, I wrote a blog a number of years ago, so they'll have to search back for it. I think the title was, How Do Animals Feel About Being Killed for Meat? And I have one or more story along the same lines. But and this is what we do in our farm. When an animal's ready to go to the butcher, we set them apart and we come and thank them. And we thank every chicken that we butcher on the farm and every pig that we send to the butcher.
Well, you know, that's empathy, compassion is part of what being human is about. And taking care of the animal kingdom, because we're all in it together, really.
We are. We're definitely all in it together. And the domestic animals were given to us to live with us and to be our partners in creating a healthy world. And we need to respect them for that. The problem with the conventional system, the industrial system, is it treats animals as units of production instead of as sacred beasts. And units of production, that was the Marxist dream to industrialize agriculture and get rid of the small farmer, the peasant farmer.
You know, I think it's being extrapolated to us at this point. So everything's becoming a unit of production.
Yes, right. You're right. That's a good way of looking at it. Yes.
But we have the means and the thinking, the higher thinking to not fall into that trap. And
right.
it does come down to compassion and loving yourself. Because this is an act, to me, feeding your body, treating it with dignity is loving yourself, not just
loving yourself. Yeah, that's right.
And if you love yourself, you love other people.
Everybody has a role, and we've all chosen to come down here into physical embodiment, and we all have tasks to do. This is why it's so important to have goals. It's one of the things my husband says, have a goal, nothing to do with health, but something that you want to accomplish, maybe in a week, maybe in a year, but have goals.
Mm-hmm. I think it gives you purpose, doesn't it?
Yes, right.
Now, I know that you've written a book about the contagion myth, and I'm curious to get your take on that. I know that our body is self-healing if we give it the nutrients to do so. Mm-hmm. What do you think about, I mean, I'm not getting to COVID, but just in general of being more resilient and less susceptible to getting ill?
Well, I actually make a very radical argument in this book, and I'm not any stranger to radical arguments. After all, I've argued that raw milk is safe and healthy, and cholesterol is your friend, and your body absolutely needs animal fats. In this book, I argue that there's no such thing as contagious disease. And by that, I mean disease that's transferred from one person to another via microbes, whether it's bacteria or viruses or whatever. Mm-hmm. I go through a lot of diseases considered contagious, like smallpox, TB, typhoid, all of these diseases once considered contagious, and show that there is another explanation for these diseases. And there really are only three things that cause disease. One is nutrient deficiency. Two is poisons, including electromagnetic poisons, like what we have today, and injury. And usually somebody gets sick because of a combination of these.
That's a really
but it's not bacteria and viruses. They're there. We find them there. But so do we find maggots on dogs. On dead dogs, we would never say that the maggots killed the dog. But the maggots are there to eat dead tissue, and the bacteria are there as the garbage collection crew to clean up dead and inflamed tissue, just doing their job. And we now realize that what they're calling viruses are actually exosomes. They're very helpful little creatures that try to stabilize the cell when it's being attacked or starved.
You know, I actually like where you're going with this because it's a mindset change as opposed to you being a victim of something coming at you. If you think about your body as being able to defend itself against whatever hits it, as long as it's allowed to work, and it's about being permissible, right? So if you have a cell,
it's not being afraid. It's also puts the burden on you. I won't say burden, but the responsibility on you to take care of your own health. You can't blame a virus, or you can't. I often say we blame disease on the three G's: germs, germs, genes, and God. Okay, and that's wrong on every count. First of all, God does not want us to be sick, and germs don't cause disease, and genes don't cause disease. What causes disease is nutrient deficiencies and poisons and injuries.
Well, I'll extend that. It's your cells being permissible. So your cell, if it doesn't have what you just described, the proper nutrition, hydration, even how you think, then it becomes susceptible to being attacked and having this balance be taken away.
Well, the cells die. They actually get sick and die, and then the bacteria come along and clean things up. But it's really not an attack from the outside. I know it's a very difficult mindset to get out of because we've all been taught this all our lives.
Well, you know, I think it's actually a freedom. It's a freeing mentality because
it frees you up. It absolutely does. And you don't have to be afraid of
things. No. And you're not going to depend on some drug to help you when you should be eating properly, getting rid of things that are people sometimes that are toxic in your environment and actually making yourself more resistant and resilient. And that's that empowerment, I think, totally negates fear, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
I mean, you can't be afraid if you know you have options and ammunition against something. So,
But the question is, you know, what is a good diet? Because there's so much misinformation about diet out there. And if you go to the newspapers or a doctor or whatever, they'll tell you to eat a low-fat plant-based diet. Mm-hmm. This is a starvation diet. It will not make you better. You may temporarily feel better if you get off of processed foods, but eventually on a low-fat plant-based diet, you will develop severe nutrient deficiencies.
So when you're talking plant-based, are you talking vegan or you're talking vegetarian? I mean, they're both, they're not
well,
the same.
I'm really talking about any of them, but vegan, of course, is a death sentence, and especially for growing children. But even a diet that just has a tiny bit of meat, but mostly plant foods, is not going to nourish you with the way you need. The animal foods are much more nutrient dense. And especially the fats and the organ meats of the animals. Mm-hmm. So we teach people one way or another, you need to get some liver into your diet and you need to eat the fats. You need to eat butter, whole milk, cream, cheese, nothing hard about that, that at all.
Well, let's go back in time for hunter gatherer and the simplest diet that humans ate. It was meat. Based and mostly
based, yeah. I wrote a book called Nourishing Diets, uh-huh. and I describe the diets from all over the world, and there's a few things that stand out in all of these diets. One is that they did choose the organ meats over the muscle meats. Secondly, there were a lot of fermented foods in these diets, and thirdly, foods that are very difficult to digest, like grains, were carefully prepared to pre-digest them and make them easier for us to digest. Another thing about these diets is they all had salt. And we really do need salt. Our requirements are met with 1.5 teaspoons of salt per day, but a lot of people need more.
Wow. And just think of all the cardiologists and people who treat high blood pressure telling you to strip the salt from your diet. Just get rid of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like counterintuitive what we're being told.
Well, we have a salt taste bud in our mouth, and that's nature's way. It's God's way of telling us to put salt on our food because the food tastes better when we have salt on it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So from what's your – and then we're going to take a break in a couple minutes, but I want to start off the conversation. What is the optimal diet for an average healthy human?
Well, it is a nutrient-dense diet. It's a diet that contains pastured eggs, pastured meat, with the fat on the meat, organ meats a couple times a week, whole raw dairy products, properly prepared grains, a good unrefined salt. Bone broth is a very important part of our diet. And then, of course, the lacto-fermented foods like raw sauerkraut for the good bacteria, the good flora.
Well, what about the salt? Is there a difference between sea salt? I know the salt that we get, it used to have iodine. It doesn't have it anymore. So that's part of why we're seeing so much thyroid disease. But what about Himalayan salt versus sea salt? Is there any difference?
Well,
is that marketing?
I think the best word to use is unrefined salt that has not had any minerals taken out of it. So some sea salt has been refined. So you have to be a little bit careful. And by the way, the Weston A. Price Foundation publishes a shopping guide. It comes out every year. I'm just pulling out the shopping guide for 2022, which we just published. We name brand names and we have a whole page on brands of salt. In fact, let me just look this up and see how much salt and spices. So you can use a shopping guide to guide you in your food choices.
Well, that's helpful. Because you really have so many choices. Most of them are not really choices. So if you're going to go spend your money, you want to make sure you're not taking one step forward and two back. I mean, that's really, it's
actually,
what it comes
down to.
Actually,
we have a whole page of unrefined salt.
Oh, wow.
So there's plenty of it around. And by the way, when the salt is not refined, it contains magnesium. And a teaspoon and a half of unrefined salt provides 800 milligrams of magnesium. That's twice the RDA. So it's easy to get your magnesium if you're using the right kind of salt.
So all of these minerals that are cofactors that we just take for granted. I mean, you don't even have to take all these supplements. And if you're eating properly, I would think supplements.
Exactly right.
And there's no way that a supplement is better absorbed than taking it naturally. Exactly.
Right.
Well, yeah. On that note, let's take our final break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. And, you know, before the break, we were speaking about simple things that people can do to actually keep themselves healthy. People don't even think about the micronutrients. And salt is key for functioning of body fluids. If you retain water, if you don't, how your kidneys function, how your blood pressure is regulated.
Salt is essential to life. And we also make hydrochloric acid for digesting meat out of the chloride portion of the salt. We don't get chloride from our food. We get it from salt. So without salt, you can't digest meat. And then the sodium part of salt activates enzymes for digesting carbohydrates. So we need salt for digestion. And that's why food tastes better when we put salt on it.
Just imagine all of the antacids and blocking of the acid in the stomach medications that we could get off of. I mean, it just seems like there's no thought involved in healthcare. I mean, and part of it is that we don't learn nutrition very much in medical school, but it's been overtaken by commercial interests. So there's a big money. And I think the older I get.
Big money and sick people.
Exactly.
One of the things that I like to point out, if you buy milk replacer for baby calves, now we give baby calves their mother's milk, but if you buy milk replacer, which is like formula for calves, the fourth ingredient is animal fat. Because babies need animal fat to grow properly. They need the cholesterol to grow properly because babies don't make their own cholesterol. Mm. When you buy a formula for human infants, there's no cholesterol, there's no animal fat in that formula. It's made with skim milk and vegetable oils.
That doesn't sound healthy at all from a
no.
from a neurological standpoint.
I mean, it really
standpoint.
Should be a law of forbidding formula that's not made from whole milk. But the industry does not want to waste the butterfat part of the milk on babies and children. They want to put it into ice cream where they get a lot more profit from it.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's really amazing. But you know, if we as consumers demand better, they do follow the money, right? So if we were to change our buying habits, change how what we find is important, I think that would force that in all those industries to take a hard look at what they're doing, because it's always about the money.
Well, one thing you can do to change the whole farming system is to eat butter, because that just kind of completely changes the equations that they have.
I think you're absolutely right. Not only for the food industry, but for the healthcare industry as well.
And that's right.
From the standpoint you mentioned with cows and vitamin D, vitamin D is one of the most important hormones that we have. It is protective. It makes your cells less likely to get infected. It lowers the risk of cancer. And I didn't realize that, well, I know you are what you eat, no question. But to have a cow that's grass-fed and grazing in sun, I didn't realize that their vitamin D level would be that much higher. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Well, the vitamin D will be in the fats and organ meats. But one thing that we caution people is not to take vitamin D on its own, because that creates a deficiency in vitamin A. Vitamins A and D need to be together, and then you don't need that much of either of them because they work together. So this is why we are big advocates for cod liver oil, natural cod liver oil with the natural vitamins in it, so you get the A and D together.
So my mom used to give me that as a kid. I hated it, but I guess it was appropriate. So fish oil then is not the end all be all. Cod liver oil.
No, fish oil is made from the skin of the fish. It's boiled at least four times in the processing, and it's not a source of the vitamins. It's got omega-3 in it, but that omega-3 is destroyed, actually made toxic by the processing.
Wow.
So we really warn people, no fish oil. In fact, this thing about fish oil has really kind of died down because so many studies have shown it to be harmful.
Wow. And that's that was pushed so hard.
Oh, it was. Well, it's a waste product of the fishing industry.
Jeez, it seems like most of the things that we're taking is a waste product of something.
Yeah, right.
The petrochemical.
Fluoride is a waste product of the fertilizer industry, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, let's put that in water and help our teeth,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, right.
There would be no dental disease if that were really the case, right?
That's right, because everybody's drinking fluoride. No, and as Dr. Price pointed out, in all of these cultures that he studied that had perfect teeth, they weren't taking fluoride.
Mm. Wow. And this is a whole mindset, a paradigm shift, but one that's empowering and really, quite frankly, it's easy. You go to your website.
Easy. Well, there's no renunciation. Our diet is delicious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with that. So from the standpoint, we talked about the different, we didn't talk about keto. Is the keto diet compared to the other two a little bit more healthy since you are doing fats and it's a meat-based?
It's better than the government diet, but you actually do need a certain level of carbohydrates in your diet or you'll start to have thyroid problems. So, meat, mashed potatoes with butter, a good vegetable with butter. That's a good dinner. That's the way we used to eat.
Oh, definitely. Well, my mom was like yours. She used to cook. So every night we sat down and it was made from scratch. And, you didn't get hungry afterwards. You weren't snacking.
You don't eat as much because you're nourished by the food that you're getting.
We have to take a hard look at slowing down. It's not about fast food anymore or nuking it, the microwave. I'm sure that completely destroys whatever nutrition there is.
Yeah.
And even these new food services where you can buy these dinners and you cook them yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I'm not sure those
are nutritious. They're very expensive. It's like you're paying $1 for a tablespoon of chopped parsley.
That's really amazing. Well, and you can just do it yourself. And
right.
In terms of, you have your own farm, but is that something that if you have the ability you recommend people do is just to start being more self-sufficient?
Well, I think you need skills. You need to know how to cook a whole chicken. You need to know how to make your own salad dressing. You need to know how to make broth. I mean, there's certain skills that you need to have a healthy family.
Is that something that your book, Cookbook, Nourishing Traditions would help people with?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Because that is a skill. I mean, Lord knows you're not pushing a button and setting a timer with this. But, that's what makes it fun because you're actually putting energy and effort and love and all sorts of things into the process. That's got to be very satisfying.
It definitely is satisfying. It's satisfying to see your family members be healthy and happy and satisfied.
If only we could just have that template just go through society, it'd be amazing.
Yeah.
So I know we don't have a lot of time left, but I want to make sure that we talk about the children as well. And you talked about the formula and how awful that is.
Yeah.
But breastfeeding becomes a very important thing because fats and antibodies and everything that the mother has goes straight to the baby. And I would think it's much better, easily digested compared to something that's commercially based.
The mother's milk is very easy to digest, but the quality of the milk depends on the mother's diet.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of women today just don't have the milk supply. So we have actually a homemade baby formula that's made out of raw milk. And I would estimate that about 20,000 babies have been brought up on this formula with wonderful results.
Awesome.
if for some reason you don't have enough milk, if your baby's crying all the time because he's hungry, don't despair. Just Google the Fallon formula, or you can go to our website and the recipes in Nourishing Traditions and the Nourishing Traditions Book of Baby and Child Care.
Wow, that's a great resource instead of moms having to depend on this powdered whatever.
Yeah, it's definitely not good for babies. And we tell you how to prepare for pregnancy with a nutrient-dense diet. All traditional peoples had special foods that they ate before conception. Both the men and the women consumed these foods so that the babies would be healthy and that the fetus would grow properly from the start.
Wow. That's nice. That's really awesome.
Our big emphasis is on how to have healthy babies. And we have a formula that works. It works. It's, you know, it's amazing. The stories I get about how this formula, how this program of nutrient-dense food really works for having healthy babies.
Well, people definitely need to go to your website, and anybody who's thinking of getting pregnant or currently is, I think this is godsend, quite frankly. There's been a real assault on health of pregnant of women who are carrying children, and even just the diet of children, and we have to make a change. Now, I know we only have a couple minutes left, but I'm curious, just quickly, with pork, everybody talks about how bad pork is, but if it's really, you know, the husbandry around it is important, isn't it?
Well, pork is an extremely nutritious food. It's full of B vitamins, and pork fat has vitamin D and vitamin K. But pork, like so many foods, needs special preparation. And we actually funded some studies that are published in our journal and on our website. I just put in pork and you'll see the studies that we did. It's how preparation of pork affects the blood. And when someone just eats a pork chop, their blood coagulates. It has rulo, and they're not as don't have as much energy. But if they marinate the pork in vinegar or lime juice or whatever, and then make the pork chop, that doesn't happen.
Wow.
And pork that's been cured, made into ham or bacon or whatever, that doesn't happen. So the pork requires special preparation, and then it's fine for us to eat.
Oh, that's good to know. Now, in the seconds that we have left, how can and time goes way too quickly, but how can people reach you, your website, buy your books? Because you are just a natural resource in yourself.
Well, the website is WestonAPrice.org. And if you're new to our teachings, there's a tour you can take on the right-hand navigation bar that says take a tour. So it's WestonAPrice.org. Then my blog is NourishingTraditions.com. And my website for buying my books is NewTrendsPublishing.com. But you can get all of my books on Amazon, except The Contagion Myth. Amazon banned that book, but it's on Barnes & Noble. And then we made a new title to The Contagion Myth called The Truth About Contagion, and that one is on Amazon. But they're the same book.
Well, Ms. Morrell, thank you so much for joining me today. I really enjoyed our conversation, and I'm going to put a lot of this into practice myself because this is a wealth of knowledge, and I'm all about taking your power back and being self-sufficient. So thank you for everything you do. I really appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me.
It was a pleasure. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk Events.